Welcome to the Bengals Beat Podcast, presented by JosephAuto.com and Inquirer Sports. Here, every Tuesday, your Cincinnati.com Bengals beat writers take you inside Paul Brown Stadium for the scoop on all things Bengals. Hear from players, coaches, and anyone else relevant to the team throughout the week. Remember, you can subscribe on iTunes and Google Play or listen on our must-have Bengals app. Let's go.
All right, welcome to the Bengals Beat Podcast, the BBP. Back at you, Paul Davis Jr., Jim Belsarski. Jim, this should come with a disclaimer today that drugs are involved. This
All
is
the drugs.
A drugged up edition of the BBP today. We are both sick.
I'm a pro, man. I got the Advil colon sinus, backing it up with the Sudafed colon sinus, backing it up with the Robitussin.
Yeah,
for the cough that's building, and for the kids out there, hey, don't mix drugs. But the reason I do it that way is because they're all you can use them in conjunction if you get that 4-hour overlap.
It's like the perfect. It's the perfect chemistry.
It's a perfect chemistry.
So we're learning. We're learning lessons in how to mix drugs properly here, as you
and
expect
safely.
To.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, this is you know, send it out to the kids. Ask your parents about how to properly mix your drugs.
Right.
But when you do mix your drugs, make sure you use the 4-hour overlap?
It's 4 hours, but usually when you do it that way, when they don't have the same ingredients, you can hit that 3:30 mark, so you don't have a gap.
Yeah.
Strong.
Man, I'm learning a lot here already. we're already learning a lot.
So I'm a little woozy. I might say something funny, but or dumb. I don't
yes.
know. Probably dumb.
Probably dumb, and that's okay. Dumb. Well, I'll try to match you on that. I'm not an expert of the drug mixing like you are, so I can't quite claim that I'm in that kind of state, but I'm not well. I'm attempting to battle through. I just have the basic, you know, a little bit of the basic Advil. And those types. Yeah. I'm not on the full, you know, I don't have the whole shelf going.
I go
right
hard
now.
Man.
You do. I love that you're rocking the Robitussin. So one of my favorite Chris Rock bits of all time is his bit on Robitussin, how that was his dad's answer to everything, no matter what. He's like, you broke a bone? Pour some Robitussin on. Let that tussin sink to the bone, boy. That's one of my favorite. That was my favorite Chris Rock bits of all time. Just pour some tussin on it. He said, when you run out of Robitussin, you put some water in a bottle, shake it up. That's Motussin. Oh, I love Chris Rock. If only we were big enough that we could get Chris Rock on the podcast, that would be my happiest day of all time. We are not that big.
No.
We are just two dudes in a bunker at Paul Brown Stadium, unfortunately. I don't think he would his people would respond to our interview requests and or what he would even talk about with the Bengals.
Right.
We didn't have to talk about the Knicks for 45 minutes, I'm pretty sure. But anyway, so we should probably talk about this Bengals team, I guess, since they're 4-0. Another fairly efficient beatdown of a team that they outclassed.
Yeah.
That's 4 weeks in a row for that statement. You know, the only drama that we've seen in 4 weeks really was against Baltimore. So they have a minute and 58 seconds this year that they've trailed.
Right.
And I would say outside of those 2 minutes, they've been pretty much in control, and I don't think it's really been
right.
There were a few moments on Sunday where you said, "Oh, Kansas City maybe is gonna," and then the Bengals defense would get a sack or run into Wallace Gilbert in a reverse, or Chiefs would just commit penalty after penalty,
right.
Or Andy Dalton would make a play,
right,
and it was over just like that. And we are not for like the third week in a row going to go into I can't believe what we're seeing from Andy Dalton, but I'll just say that statement. We'll move forward. I can't believe what we're seeing from Andy Dalton. I mean, this credit to him,
right.
Hat tip, man. We had in the preseason before the training camp even started, we had our 10 questions, and the Andy Dalton question was, why should we believe that Andy Dalton could improve? He's had 64 starts. He's played a ton of football. He is who he is. And that was my contention. Like, why would you think that this guy would improve? You've seen 64 starts of him.
So
you don't just all of a sudden magically get better. if you're going to try to take credit for being on the other side.
Is this my opportunity for a mic drop?
No, it's not. It's not, actually. You can
oh, I dropped it anyway.
You did.
At least that was four games.
If, by the way, for those, because none of you can see that, it was the weakest mic drop in history. I mean, it wasn't even really a drop. It was sort of a tap. It was a nice tap. I'll call you out on that. Here's the thing. Here is the thing about what you said. You said he could improve his completion percentage.
And deep ball.
You did say in deep ball.
And guess who's leading the league in 25-plus-yard completions?
He's averaging 10.2 yards per attempt. Yeah.
Guess what?
It's a stupid number. I mean, okay, so, all right, Mike, drop for you. Congratulations. I was thinking.
Hey, I got to roll with it until, because if it all goes bad, then, you know.
Yeah, it can.
It'll be thrown back, so I got to own it now.
Yeah. Well, just the improv plays alone really have been the most impressive thing to me. I mean, how many times in the past would you see Andy Dalton on a couple of plays yesterday? The low snap on third and two early, he picks it up, and rather than just being like, you know what, take the sack, he picks it up, looks, and just wings it down the sideline right on the money to A.J. Green. And then the other one, obviously, the play of the day, when he gets flushed out of the pocket and runs, and rather than just check it down and go for the punt, he zings a dart 50 yards down the field on a rope right on point to a diving Brandon Tate. I mean, I don't care what anybody says, Andy Dalton's never done that type of stuff before. You can show me a play here and there. He's doing it consistently every week with something like this. You just never really seen that from him. It's a whole different side of him that they appear to have unlocked. I mean, it's impressive.
Yes,
but you're right. But we don't need to dive any deeper down into that. We'll let it go. So the Bengals are 4-0, first time since 2005, fourth time in history, 1975, which we all remember so clearly. No, we don't. 1988, which Bengals fans definitely remember, and 2005, which Bengals fans definitely remember. Cough, 2005 podcast. You know, I will say this. Those last two seasons that we talked about are, in the last 30-whatever years of Bengals history, the two most beloved teams in this franchise's history. No offense to the 81 Super Bowl team. They were great. Sorry, Lap. But that 88 team with Boomer and James Brooks and the Icky Shuffle and everything that they – downtown Eddie Brown. Right. I mean, Sam Weish – in that team, just people were in love with them, and not just locally but nationally. And it was a ridiculous atmosphere in this city like you've never seen. And 2005 was mirroring that until Kimo von Olhoffen.
Right.
And so when you are now on the plane, on a plane, not the plane, with those two, the bar is those two, you are officially in special territory. I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's you can sense that something is percolating.
And here's the thing, you know, and I know we're week four of the regular season, so people kind of forget what's been written, what's been said months ago at this point. But in reality, I mean, these players were talking about something special, something different.
Mm-hmm.
Back in training camp, back in OTAs.
Yeah,
I think Leon Hall said way back when, this team's got some juice,
mm-hmm.
something he had never felt in his time here. And again, you're like, well, you know, back in that, you know, shells, helmets, and T-shirts, you're like, well, what does that mean? You know,
we've heard that before, and, exactly. and players all say that type of stuff early in the season, so it's easy to brush aside at that point.
But at least so through 4 weeks, you know, as you said, they've played to a point where, you know, in terms of Bengals history. It's rarefied air.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, they've had good starts. And I think it's kind of interesting because we've talked so much throughout the offseason and before we got into training camp and all that stuff about getting the band back together in 2013, sort of the way it was meant to be, bringing Michael Johnson back and Pat Sims and everybody being healthy again and with Marvin Jones and what Tyler Eifert was supposed to be. And, you know, it's easier to see if you're looking at if this is a graph, right? Would you want to? Can we break out the graph?
Sure.
If the Bengals' ascension in the Dalton Green era is it's kind of looks like a curve, right? 2000, it's like a bell curve. 2000 kind of goes up. 2011, it goes up. 12, it goes a little more. 13, it goes, it's way up, and then the San Diego loss happens. And 14 happens, and that felt, because of the way that season went, if you just look at it, maybe from not investigating too deeply, it looks like, okay, you're now on the downside of that. Right. Now it's the downside of the bell curve. But what I think we're seeing more and more, and what I think it looks more and more like, was 14 was what a lot of us said it was, and that's the injury season just right. taking a nick out of what should have continued to be an ascension.
Right.
And so we haven't seen the top for this group because of 14 should almost, because of all the injuries, because of losing everybody, should kind of be thrown out. And if you throw that out, you're still on this upward
right.
rise. And that's what this team looks like right now. And that can change quickly, and it doesn't necessarily affect the inevitable question of what happens in the playoffs, but we can't answer that now.
No.
Because what happened in 13 was maybe one of the best teams that the Bengals have had of the Marvin Lewis era, and they still got throttled by San Diego in the first round of playoffs. But, I'm just saying you can see how maybe this is that core, that group, this Dalton Green era taking it to the next level.
Right, which is interesting because if you think about it, this is it in a way. You know, for the extensions that were handed out, many weren't. And there's some guys that, you wonder at their age how long it can keep going. Some bigger changes will happen after this year. And we kind of talked about that at the start of the season. Like, this is kind of the last run for some of these guys or this entire group. And, I'd be curious to see, how they feel, if they feel a year was maybe stolen in a way due to that stuff. Because I know talking to former coaches and general managers, at least in terms of the offense, they're like, they don't even put that playoff game on the quarterback or the coaching staff because they're like, who was out there?
Yeah.
Kobe Hamilton was out there. Rex Burkhead's playing wide receiver, and the defense had no one playing linebacker. Mm-hmm. And that's what happens.
Yeah.
No one's going to make an excuse for it, but you're right, Paul. It is interesting to think about that way. Especially when you see this whole group together now, and you're like, wow, what if Marvin Jones and Tyler Eifert had a whole other year of development and chemistry and all that other stuff.
Yeah.
But,
go ahead, continue.
No, I guess that's what happens.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
You were talking about looking at next year. Can you just imagine how much cash these free agents are gonna pull in if the Bengals put that run together? There is so much to be gained by this team killing the stereotypes, breaking the playoff curse,
right.
All of that stuff, because across the league, that will be viewed as even being better than what it was because of where it happened.
Exactly.
And because these people were the difference. Why the Bengals were able to break their run. So for all the free agents, the money would be huge.
Right. I mean,
if the Bengals have one of the top offenses in football and make a run in the postseason, Marvin Jones, Mosanu are going to ask him for a lot of money. You can go on down the line there, and defensively as well, if they make a run. I mean, all these players that they have up can go and ask for a lot of money. Hugh Jackson certainly would be making a massive case for a head coaching job that, many inside this building, Marvin Lewis has said it publicly, he deserves. There's just so much on the line. It makes sense why there's been this intense open to the season and sense of urgency, because everybody here has so much to gain.
Right.
And now that Andy Dalton is coming along, they feel like they can go grab it.
Right.
It feels attainable.
Yeah.
Whereas before, they wondered if 14 would hold them down.
Right.
It's really interesting. Well, okay, I want to take a quick drop in here to bring in a conversation that you had with Ray Maluga after Sunday's win against Kansas City. Obviously, a lot of it was about what happened in the game, but there was a significant, delve into this team in general,
right,
and some of the stuff that we're talking about. And, you know, Ray is a guy that we hear from every once in a while, and he's been around here long enough that he offers a lot of really good perspective. It's hard to believe that it was 2009,
right,
was when he was drafted, and he's been here 6 years now. But so anyway, you can Ray has a bit of a different delivery.
Right.
It kind of is a lot of times you take the scenic route to the point,
yep,
but that's okay. Try to just hop along, go along for the ride and enjoy it, and listen to what he had to say about where this team is at in his eyes.
He has to take pride in the fact that, you haven't allowed a touchdown in the first half at all. I mean, are you even aware that start that strong?
Not aware at all.
I guess today, though, they're going to have all the nice total yardage numbers.
Right.
But
yeah,
when it came down to it
look,
right, so what,
look
what,
bad
what
on paper.
But what changed in those tighter quarters inside the 25, inside the 10, that you guys were able to prevent that?
It's, obviously when, like you said, you look on paper, it looks like we gave up a lot of passing yards, a lot of rushing yards. But, it's just those little plays that we give up that, that put them in position to make those field goals. Obviously it's plays that we can't take back, but at the same time, we're that good of a defense to come back in the huddle and regroup, refocus, and go out there and hold them to three. If we can hold them to three, that's a win in us.
Adam said, he's like, it gets physical, tighter spaces. He's like, they're kind of a dink and dunk team. You get within 25 yards, it's a little harder to score on us like that. I get to see it today,
Yeah, we take pride in things like that.
Yeah.
Obviously, we feel bad for giving up all those yards going down to our side of the field. But at the same time, holding them with just 3 points, that's a positive for us. And like I said, offense does their job, put some points on the board, and we got to answer the call by not letting them score.
Is it a matter of will late for you guys? Because, the time of possession, I think they had like 33 minutes. But yet, again, in those final fourth quarter drives, they couldn't finish it.
Right.
You guys did. So, was it tiring, but you're like, okay, let's...
The game of football is tiring regardless of what position you play. And obviously, like I said, they look good on paper driving the ball all the way down the field.
Right.
But it's a matter of, are we going to let them score? That's where we grab our nuts, and try to play the football we know we can. This is a veteran group. Like I was telling them, the only person that had learned defense was AJ Hawk. And out of the 10 guys, everyone knows the system good enough. That's just, a matter of we really understand that we know that if we are out of our gap or we miss a tackle, we know that everyone else is going to rally and help us out. So it starts with practice, and everyone's swimming into the football. The biggest thing is we're 4-0, it's something to be proud of. Obviously, wins don't come easy in the NFL, and regardless of the record, we came out to play, and we played a very good team, and making them a one-dimensional by stopping 25 is something that we take pride of, and that's what we try to do.
Just finally, you've been here a while, you've been on some good teams. 4-0, it's the first time since 05. It sets you up. How important, especially after, last year, everyone was coming in here asking you guys, last year 3-0. Is it night, it was a question people asked, and you guys answered it, I guess, to win that.
Well, it's... I can say this is the first time in a long time that the offense and the defense are clicking. There are some games, way back when, last year and so forth, where the offense is clicking, the defense is not. The defense is clicking, but the offense is not. And the offense puts us in a great situation to hold the ball, give them back the ball, and go downfield and score some points. And so As far as a complete team, in the 7 years I've been here, this is probably the most complete team that I've ever been a part of. And the scary thing is, you know, we're only getting better. We're only realizing our talent, and you know, we just got to come back in and watch this film and work on our mistakes, work on the things that we need to work on, and then come back and prepare for Seattle next week at home, and we'll be fine.
What stuck out to you after that conversation with him the most? I mean,
it was the fact that it wasn't so much the, hey, this is one of the first times in a long time offense and defense are clicking. That's almost cliche in a way, but it was the fact that he said in his 7 years, this is the most complete team he's been on. And I understand he wasn't here. He's been around a long time, but not 2005.
Right.
But, you know, to hear a guy, especially after a game, just flat out say, I would extrapolate it to say, if it's the most complete team, it's the best team that he's been on.
Right.
And I know record-wise, maybe there's no argument there, but I don't know. I find it I found that interesting that a defensive leader would put that out there after 4 weeks.
Yeah, and I think that this team knows that. And I think there is more of a sense of not being afraid to say it.
Right.
There is definitely a sense of stay humble, you know, 1 week at a time. But, you know, kind of a question that I found myself going around the locker room on Sunday asking guys was, it's so easy to roll off what you're supposed to say and 1 week at a time and, you know, just trying to stay focused on the next game and long season. But how hard is it to contain that excitement when you are doing what you're doing, though? When you see what's happening, when you see what this can be and what this is becoming. I mean, that's a hard thing to stay week to week when you start thinking about, man, this is a team that is good enough to do it, you know, to maybe make that push. And it's not crazy to say, oh, they could be the one that could upend the Patriots. I mean, that's probably a pretty real statement. You know, that maybe they are the best team that has a chance to derail Tom Brady's revenge tour.
Yeah, you can only look at what's happened. Even though today's over, as the head coach as the coach likes to say, but they're good.
They're good.
I mean, and I mean, anyone listening to this knows how Paul and I felt about this team in that regard. I think we both picked them to go to the playoffs, to win a division.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's not a surprise, but I think to me, as sort of the new guy into the beat, into this culture, it's there is that feel of something different, something new.
Yeah, absolutely.
And they're affirming that.
Yeah, no, they are with the way they're playing. And we'll learn a lot more on Sunday.
Right.
You know, when Seattle comes to town, it's they've played four teams. I mean, who do you think is the best of those four teams they played? I mean, who at the end of the year will have the best record of those four? Of Baltimore, of Oakland, of San Diego, and Kansas City. Who do you think will end up having the best record?
Offhand, I think it'll be San Diego maybe by a game or two, just because they're 2-2. Chiefs are 1-3.
Like an 8-8 team?
Yeah.
I feel like we saw about 3-8, maybe 4-8-8 teams.
I wouldn't go that far.
Raiders? You're not handing it to the Raiders?
No.
You think that's a mirage?
Yeah.
They did lose to the Bears.
Yeah, I think the Raiders.
Like 6-10.
I think the Raiders were fortunate, and I think we'll look back and be like, oh, wow, the first game after Charles Suggs got hurt, they at home, were able to get Baltimore. And I think, it's the Browns.
Yeah.
I thought Kansas City was a playoff team to start the year. At 1-3, that's a heck of a hole. So San Diego, Kansas City, I think, are the two best teams. They're about the same to me.
Yeah.
That AFC West behind Denver.
Yeah.
But you know what? You know what's funny, though, Paul? I think, I don't know, maybe one of the first BBPs, we talked about strength of schedule and what does that mean? I mean, at the start of the year, we're like, this is the hardest schedule ever. And right now it's like, this schedule sucks.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah, exactly. That's why strength of
Seattle's,
schedule.
I mean, Seattle's 2-2. I think they'll, by the time you're listening to this, will be 2-2, but they're 2-2.
Yeah, right. And it's early.
Right.
But let's – so, I mean, it's one of those things to say. People are going to say this. It's who did the Bengals, who have they beaten? They've beaten four teams that probably won't make the playoffs,
but,
I think.
Well, right? But you got to beat them, right?
You absolutely, no. I'm only saying this to prove the point of how I think Seattle will be the legitimacy game for them. Where even if Seattle lost, you know, I mean, if they were to go to 2-3, a lot of people will talk about Seattle 2-3, but there would be a more legitimacy to beating them than anybody else on their schedule, and even more than they would if they then went to Buffalo and won, or even went to Pittsburgh. I mean, you know, there's just a legitimacy because of what Seattle is that I think it proves something. And I think this team knows that. And I expect to see a lot of fire out of these guys on Sunday because of what it is. I wanted to do this just for fun here. Let's go through the undefeated teams and rank them. Okay. So here are your undefeated teams. There's six of them. The Patriots are 3-0. Everybody else, obviously, 4-0. You've got the Carolina Panthers, the Atlanta Falcons, the Denver Broncos, Pats, Bengals, Green Bay Packers. Who's your one?
Oh, I hate to say it.
It's got to be the Patriots.
The hoodie.
It is. I mean, they are. He's got them all riled up. Us against the world. Brady is just
Super
crushing
Bowl champs.
It.
Up against the world.
Well,
I can't stand those guys.
Goodell created that.
Yeah.
Raj created this whole thing.
I give the hoodie the edge. But after that, I'll let you go first. I'm curious to see what you think.
I would say Pats are one. Two is the Packers. And then three is the Bengals.
I was going to say, do it.
No, I do. I do think that. Peyton Manning is, it's over. I mean, he can win a Super Bowl. They can win a Super Bowl this year because their defense is incredible. Peyton Manning is resourceful and smart enough that he can lob some passes into the right position, but he does not have anywhere near the arm strength that he had last year.
No. I'd go so far as to say, if I can do this,
you can do it. You can do whatever you want, and you're on drugs. We can always just blame the drugs.
I have to go with the hoodie, but I will put Bengals 2A, Packers 2B, in that pot.
That doesn't count. You can't. That means you made the Bengals 2 and the Packers 3. There's no 2A, 2B to try to hedge it.
I think Aaron Rodgers. I think if they were to play each other,
the home team would win.
I think so.
Neutral
because
field.
I think this team,
neutral field, you picked the Bengals?
I think this Bengals team has all of the elements defensively that would give the Packers offense, which I've seen up close for 3 years, issues.
Yeah.
And I think that right now through 4 weeks, yes. You know what? Yeah. I'll just say that. I'll say it. If I had a power rankings, Bengals would be 2.
Bengals would be 2. Packers would be 3.
Yeah.
Aaron Rodgers would throw for 420 yards.
But you know what? They might kick 7 field goals.
Yeah, it's not Alex Smith back there.
No, I don't know. I think here's the other thing, though. I also think the Bengals would score on the Packers. Packers defense is very good this year.
Mm-hmm.
Very good.
It would be they'd have to win a shootout.
And Dom Capers, what he likes to do now with Clay Matthews and Julius Peppers, and his like 7 men standing around the line looks. But the funny part about that is, you know, at this mythical Super Bowl 50 matchup right now,
right?
It would be that's what Andy Dalton's arguably best at.
Right.
Is figuring all of that out.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
So I think right now I would and also I think just because if people really want to dive into it, Packers offensive line is not really good right now. Mm-hmm. They're not.
No.
So I would do.
So you think the Bengals are more complete in that?
I think the Bengals are a more complete team through 4 weeks at 4-0, despite the obvious deficiency. When I say deficiency, I mean right now Andy Dalton's in the MVP conversation.
He is.
If Cam Newton is, if all these other guys are, then he deserves to be too. So, I'm just not a believer in the NFC South.
Yeah.
I mean, whatever. Atlanta. I saw it. Atlanta could go 14-2 and they'll get rocked at home. I just don't. Those guys, that division needs to prove it
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you on that. So we go Broncos 4. Both of us have Broncos 4. We flip Packers and Bengals.
Yeah.
Okay, and then Panthers, Falcons are in the back end of those. And
if Seattle drops 55 on this team, I'll just say, right. Hey, man, I was on 4 different types of drugs.
Right. That's it. You have the – this is the perfect opportunity for you to say stuff that you normally wouldn't say. Just let out some feelings because if it turns out to backfire and you have the drug abuse thing that you can fall back on.
Yes.
We'll get you some help. You know, we'll get you some help. We'll get this taken care of, but you've got that. So let me dive into something that I just kind of brought up. And so this is, we're going to have to nitpick when you're 4-0 and you're second in tie for second in the NFL in point differential behind only the revenge tour. You're like, okay, what's wrong? Well, this Steve Smith, 186, Jeremy Maclin, Alex Smith to Jeremy Maclin goes bonkers.
Right. I did not see that coming, to be honest. But
I didn't either. I remember us saying it last week that I think it would just be if they would shut down Jeremy Maclin. So other top receivers, and people have been able to throw on this team. And there's been, you know, Jamal Charles had some moments where he was able to get free, although he didn't get as loose as he normally gets. And Melvin Gordon had a really nice day against these guys, too. They had a lot of trouble stopping the run. So there's certainly far more holes on this defense than this offense is spectacular right now.
Right.
I can't find a fault, really, outside of Jeremy Hill. It would be nice if he averaged 5.5 a carry again.
Right. But I think they'll take 4.6.
They'll take,
four.
Right, yeah. They'll take what they're getting out of the combo of the two. So, you know, I think if there is a concern, it's over a lot of the yards that are being given up. And you're seeing these blown assignments a little bit, and you're seeing guys running free a little bit. And you wonder if that's maybe a little bit of a concern.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's legitimate. I mean, Paul Gunther sat with us on Monday, and said, he specifically said 10 plays against the Chiefs equaled 260 yards, which is more than half of what the Chiefs put together. Now, conversely, if you guys read Cincinnati.com, once the Chiefs got within the 30, they only had 35 yards.
Yeah.
So on one hand, they're like, yeah, we give up a lot of yards, but we don't give up touchdowns this week. But to your point, Paul, it has to be concerning, because on one hand, you can make you could say, well, you know, Derek Carr and then Flacco and these guys couldn't quite finish the deal. They're running 45 yards downfield but didn't get to the end zone.
Baltimore was able to finish the deal. I mean, they got touchdowns.
That's true. But, I guess they weren't able to do what one of those touchdowns Baltimore scored was defensive. I mean, and they didn't score a touchdown in the first half. So I guess it's nitpicky, which is what happens when you're 4-0. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
And you only give up the eighth fewest points per game in the league. But there are seeds of concern, I think, because how it's happening. Because Adam Jones has been dinged up. Because Dre Kirkpatrick is dinged up. Because George Iloka is dinged up.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, if they don't sack the quarterback, it goes back to maybe that linebacker issue we talked about, where like kind of that soft middle of like, can these guys cover for that long? And you're seeing, that's where chunks could be gained, and you're like, wow.
They're two games away from getting Vontaze Burfict back.
There you go.
I mean, you talk about things that we forget, too. And who knows what he'll look like, but, I mean, just toss that one in there for a second.
Right.
This team's 4-0. We're talking about them in this top three and all this, and they could be about to get Vontaze Burfict into the middle. That's something. You know, that's something to think about. That could be a next level type thing to help this defense out. But I'm concerned a bit if I'm them, because it's not that the yards are happening. And you know, we can talk all we want to about, oh well, they've only allowed this many points and forced field goals. You have enough miscommunication and blown assignments in anywhere. You know, against the pass, and somebody, you're going to get torched, and it's going to blow up on you at some point. And especially when you go against some of the best quarterbacks in this league.
Right.
When you start facing those guys, when if Big Ben comes back next time they play them, Russell Wilson coming into town, you know, not Tyrod Taylor, but you know, as you get into the schedule, you'll see these types of guys.
Right.
So, you know, to me, I think you said that was a nice word. It was excellently said. Seeds of concern,
right?
You know, it's not blossoming yet,
right?
But it's something to think about as you go forward. Because, you know, when you have guys putting up those kinds of numbers and doing it where guys are not doing the correct thing,
right?
Well, teams take advantage of that. They know they keep putting you in these types of spots and you'll eventually not do the correct thing. I mean, I remember they gave up all these yards on only these amount of plays conversation last year Paul Gunther had with us after they got throttled in New England.
Right.
Well, they all only came on 8 plays. Well, yeah, you can't give up those plays.
Right, exactly.
This is a league of 8 plays.
Right.
It's a league of 2 plays.
Exactly.
Much less 10.
Right.
So, I'm not saying that you need to be – the defense is going to screw them, but I'm saying,
right.
You know, certainly something worth keeping an eye on. Well, we mentioned enough this conversation with Paul Gunther. I do want to bring you a piece of it so you can hear a little bit from him about where the defense is at coming off the game against Kansas City. So here's a little bit of Paul Gunther from Monday with reporters in his office.
To answer your question, you're happy. I mean, that's hard to do in the NFL. Where, you know, not the whole team from not scoring a touchdown. Obviously, you know, we gave some plays there that I think there was 10 plays where we gave up 260 yards, so we got to eliminate those plays. And one of the things that I'm going to tell the players is that they're easy fixes. It's alignment. It's an alignment issue. It's an angle issue. But you know, I'm really happy with how they performed. They played hard for the most part. You know, our game plan going in was not letting 25, you know, get off in the running game. And I thought we broke a couple of them in there, but you know, not letting him really beat us in the running game and controlling 87 has been their top target. Now, you know, obviously a couple of those balls, you know, Macklin caught one slant there. We didn't have quite the angle on the tackle. It should have been a limited game. I think he got Quezzy up the sideline. Quezzy's in great position. He's just got to get his head turned around. So there's little things like that. But like I said, anytime you hold a team without a touchdown, that's you're doing some good things. You know, yardage. In my mind, that's an overblown stat. Really, it is. I mean, total yards. Because you know, if you're playing good and you're ahead in some games, I'm going to be in soft zones with it. I mean, a lot of those plays were, you know, 6, 7, 8 yard checkdowns. I mean, they were 2nd and 19, a bunch. You know, where they're you know maybe getting 8 yards and it's 3rd and 10. You know, so, I can't really always just look at total yards. I got to look at the whole picture.
Yeah, okay. You have total yards overblown. Where are you looking at? Whatever
points. My job is to keep them out of the game. My job is limit points, period. That's what I get paid to do. It ain't, hold them to 200 yards total offense and 3 of them be touchdowns. You know what I'm saying? Regardless of where we get the ball, and that was one of the points I made to the players in the offseason. Hey, if we happen to get a turnover and the ball's in the 10-yard line, put the ball down and let's go play defense. Hold them to 3. Or if they, you know, something happens, they get an interception return down to the 20-yard line, hold them to 3. They're in field goal range, hold them to 3. So I'm paid to keep them off the scoreboard.
How does it change your mentality or how does it help you that, for the most part, your unit's been able to kind of run out there with double-digit leads or early leads, I guess, where they're chasing the points always. I think you guys have only trailed 1.5 to 2 minutes of total in 4 games.
Yeah, you know, we started fast, whether we played defense first or defense second. Right. You know, I think this week, you know, they drove the one for the field goal. But, you know, it all depends on the game's going, really. You know, for me, at least, how I'm going to call the game. You know, I don't always get a chance to watch the offense go because I'm making adjustments over there with the players, but you know, when I do watch, you got to get a sense of how it's going. Hey, this is going to be a tight game. Or we got to play it close to the vest or whatever it may be. So that's something that we talk about during the week. But, you know, there's always going to be games where it may be 14-9 in the middle of the third quarter. So, you know, where you got to defend both the run and the pass. Similar to last week when the Chiefs played the Packers, they were down 28-0 before the hot dogs got warmed. The brats got warmed up. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So Now they can say, okay, hey, you nickel rushers, go tee off on these guys, and don't worry about the, hey, if they pop an 8-yard run, it's different. But you know, particularly in the middle part of the game, their 25 was still a viable threat in the running game. So, so you just gotta, as a coordinator, you gotta get a feel for how the game's going, how you feel that the flow of the game's going, and it may adjust some of your calls. But like I said, we're gonna have to play some games where, hey, the offense ain't moving the ball, so you gotta tighten up play. And play, tight coverage.
Despite having the lead for most of the year, would you say lap minute 58? I mean, you think you'd have a big blitz. I think you've only blitzed 29 times or something this year. I mean, is that just you have so much confidence in those?
I just feel like I feel like if we're getting, I was looking at the end of the game to see what kind of pressure we're getting up front with the pass rush. And if I feel like we are getting a good push with the pass rush, I'll let those guys go. Yeah. And not drop, a lot of times, sometimes in our blitzes we got to drop the D-line into coverage. So I may not want to do that. I want to keep the matchup with our defensive end on their tackle. So, like I said, you got to pick and choose when to do those things and, other times call for it, other times don't.
They really struggled with twists and stunts. Mm-hmm. Was it almost like getting a pressure package with those
stunts?
Yeah,
when you hit the quarterback 15 times in the game, right. and a couple of the pressures came home where he had to float away and throw it away or didn't get down with a lost yardage. Some of that times you're when the line's getting there with four, you're sounding or playing in coverage.
Right.
So it all depends on the week and who you're playing. Now this guy ran around a bunch. That was another concern, him running out of the pocket on the blitz and getting around the edge and running for a first down. He did that a few times on third down. So it all depends who you're playing. What kind of quarterback? What kind of line? What's their passing game schemes? They're free releasing 25 a lot. In the blitzes, so you just got to account for all that stuff.
How hard is it to consistently get that kind of pressure on a quarterback? And I'm asking in part because the offense, Andy was pressured just twice.
Right.
How hard is it to consistently do that?
Well, I can tell you because last year we had a hard time with it, and this year we're not. So, sometimes you got to manufacture the pass rush, all right? So, if you blitz them, now you may be short in coverage somewhere where, A.J. has a one-on-one or Eifert has a one-on-one or Gio has a one-on-one out there and you dump the ball out on them and it's a bad matchup. Mm-hmm. So, if you feel like if you can get them four guys home, and let me tell you, the D-line does a great job of preparing, understanding protections, understanding their opponents. They study it and they do it exactly how we ask them to do it all the time. So it's a credit to them. And, when you're getting that kind of a pass rush with four, it makes my job a whole bunch easier.
How much just having Geno back to being Geno changes that whole dynamic on the lines?
It's like night and day. And it's his credit. He came back in great shape, and he's playing his butt off. He's into it. He gives me good information coming off the field. I really value the information I get from the players in there. I really, these guys have been in the system long enough to know, hey, do we need to run this game, that game? What's looking good? How is the spacing with the line between the guard and the tackle, this guard and the center? What do we need to do? And those guys, because we talk about it during the week, the information they give me on the sideline is so valuable. Now, I'll see it myself, and sometimes I'll just ask them just, and I know what the answer is already, but I'll ask them just to reaffirm and make sure we're on the same page. You understand? So those guys have been tremendous so far. We're going to keep it going.
All right, so there's Paul Gunther. We have discussed our seeds of concern.
Yep.
And time to talk about more seeds of concern. Mike Nugent and all kickers everywhere.
Yeah.
I mean, this league is just full of misses and guys getting cut. And I mean, so Josh Scobie is cut. So now Pittsburgh moves on to their fourth kicker this year.
Right.
Scobie cost them their what would have been a win. I mean, an easy win against Baltimore. Basically chokes that game away. You have the San Diego kicker missing a chip shot. And thankfully, the Browns browned it up and jumped off sides. I mean, is
the
that
Browns
not,
guy with his hands on his helmet as the official walked by was just
is the photo of a generation.
Yeah,
of Browns, it really is. And I said, I wrote in the walkthrough somewhere, Dwayne Rudd said, "I feel you, bro."
Right,
who just like I know sometimes you do something you shouldn't have done, and It's not good.
Yeah, the Eagles would be back in this NFC conversation if they didn't have a drunken idiot kicker. I think they're that.
By the way, speaking of, Jeff Reed is like tweeting out to Pittsburgh, I'm just going to say it, right. Bring me back.
Right.
Have you seen the mugshots of you, right. Jeff Reed?
Didn't Chad Johnson just say he wants to kick field goals now? I mean, we're at that point.
Yeah.
So I guess that's the lesson or the message for Bengals fans. It's like, I understand. I'm being indoctrinated to Bengals Twitter. You know, usually yeah. It's B. Tate. UD is G. Little. And then, you know, Nuge. I'm learning about Nugent misses on Bengals Twitter. But he's not alone.
Who are you going to go get? Are you going to go pick up Josh Scobie?
No, see, that's the thing. It is. That for as crazy as people get about field goal kicking and how, quote-unquote, easy it is, it's like quarterbacks, Paul. There aren't 32 in the world that can do what they do.
Mm-hmm.
There's probably like 10 that you're like, wow, that dude's awesome.
Yeah.
And then the rest is kind of like, well, you know, we kind of believe in him.
Mm-hmm.
And, you just don't find one.
I mean, Pittsburgh's attempting that theory.
And it's not going to work. And it, you know what? It's not going to work for him. I'll tell you right now. I mean, it hasn't worked for him. And these are guys that we knew.
You know what's weird? And I think what hurts Nugent as far as, like, you know, perception of him and general Bengals Twitter hate is the fact that they pulled Josh Brown off the street a couple years back when Nugent went down and Brown was awesome and had some of the most memorable kicks. I mean, he had that long field goal to win the division or beat Pittsburgh in Pittsburgh in the win or go home game. And, you know, people remember that. And they're like, we found that guy on the street.
Yeah,
it's
but
gotta
Josh
be better
Brown,
than Nuge.
Man, I don't know.
He's still kicking. Literally. I mean,
I hope so.
Yeah.
And, I hope we have some sympathies out
and,
to the Brown family.
And Josh Brown, he's a handsome man, as I always say. Josh Brown, no one has ever looked more like me. People honestly thought it was me when they first brought him in. And so that was,
I don't know. Pittsburgh might roll you. You might have a 10. You know, yeah. I think your phone's buzzing. Yeah. Mike Tomlin.
And Mike Tomlin buzzing. Said, you look like Josh Brown, so we'll take you. You know, that was my favorite was when I was when he first came in and I went up to interview him to introduce myself. And somebody had been over there before and mentioned to him that he looked like one of the beat writers. And when I walked over, he obviously knew it was me, and he just looked up before I introduced myself and said, boy, you are one handsome man.
There you go.
And it was just too funny. So poor Josh Brown, you know.
But I would say that's a rarity, in my opinion. I could be wrong, but I think finding, even if
it is a rarity, you're right.
Unless you're going to, like, roll out one of the Zendejas brothers right now, I'd be with that.
Yes, I would too. Or I want a kickoff between the Zendejas and the Grammaticas right now. Martin?
Yeah. Martin would be good.
That's what I'm saying. Let's roll them all out in one. They all come in one Toyota Yaris.
Yeah. Hey, man. How many kickers can you fit in a Yaris? I bet you could fit like 9.
And you would say, I told you there's tons more kickers here than you thought. As you tell me every time we roll anywhere in your Yaris.
I do.
There's lots more space than you think in that thing. You're right.
Yeah,
you're right. You could
it.
Fit 4 Zendejas in there. That's what it should be now. From now, the Zendejas meter of like how much room you have in a car. Maybe we can actually get Toyota to take this up. It's just like,
I think so.
It got a 6 Zendejas rating.
Hey man, you know, if the backup quarterbacks are getting commercials,
yeah, it's time.
Backup place kickers, baby.
Dude, I would bring in Zendejas and Grammaticas to do a commercial with me tomorrow, and no problem, no none at all. So. Let's see what else. What else do we got going on around this team? Seattle comes in. Russell Wilson and the Legion of Boom and back-to-back NFC titles, including a Super Bowl, basically 1 yard away from back-to-back Super Bowl champs. You don't get, you know, as much as we talk about the concept of the complete roster and the complete team. And how that is the key is in building a roster. That it's the Seattle model. I mean, yeah. Seattle has given that legitimacy, the idea of winning with Russell Wilson, who while is definitely one of the best quarterbacks in the league, gets ripped a lot for not doing a lot of things the standard quarterback is supposed to be able to do. He's not Aaron Rodgers. He's not Tom Brady. He's not those guys.
Right.
And, you know, that is the Bengals' model. Run the football. Have a great defense that they have discussed here for a while. Now, all of a sudden, the Bengals will throw the ball.
Right.
But, you know, I think it's just really interesting. The you talk about building of rosters. You might not that this is two complete teams that are going to be going at each other now.
Yeah, it's the honestly, Paul. I mean, I think if Seattle hadn't maxed out its primetime games, we might be talking about a Sunday night primetime and trotting out that whole storyline again for this Bengals team. But you're right. It is a model. It is the model. I think this might be. I mean, I know Seattle paid a lot of their guys.
Not all of them.
And it's really hard to do this for 3 years in a row.
Yep.
And it could be their last hurrah. I know they traded for Jimmy Graham. They're trying to do some different things. But you're right.
It's going to be
a
fun.
Very good team.
It's
going to
be a fun. And you can't have more of a measuring stick game than this. And you get him in your house when they're coming from
perfect,
the West Coast.
Literally the perfect time.
Yeah.
1 p.m. on the East Coast, 10 a.m. their time.
Yeah.
I mean, it's if you're the Bengals, there are a lot of sort of those quote-unquote intangibles in your favor.
And it's going to be fun to watch Hugh Jackson's offense that he has with all the weapons, firing on all cylinders. His creative mind is just going nuts. With all kind, we saw Andrew Whitworth line up at fullback this week, and then he eventually motioned out to that overload tight end. You know, there's more where that came from.
Yep.
We can tell you that much. And so it's going to be that against the Legion of Boom. You know, the 85 Bears of our generation, essentially the 2000 Ravens of this generation. You just don't draw up it better than that. You know, it's going to be fun to watch. We were thinking about giving a name to this offense, and we were talking about Hugh's Dream Machine.
Yeah,
I think I like this. I think I like this.
I'm all in. Hashtag
Dream Machine. BBP.
BBP. Let's see it, people. Hey, we always give you something at the end.
We're giving
you
it to you
now. on this hashtag Dream Machine.
Hugh's Dream Machine.
Yeah,
that's it. That's it right there. Hashtag Hugh's Dream Machine. And maybe if anybody's fun with Photoshop, if you'd like
we're
to get at me, dog.
Yep.
Get at me. Let's see what you guys got. You guys have been great. It's awesome. We're seeing so many more tweets come at us with hashtag BBP. It's fantastic. I'm glad all you guys are listening, and you know, the numbers are backing that up. We've seen that tons of you are listening to the podcast on a regular basis now. Thank you so much for listening. We love you guys. We love you more than the readers, and I'll say that. Those people that just read and don't listen, I'll say that. Because it's you know, it's like there's two things that I love. I love the app. And I love the podcast, like, more than anything. Anybody talks about either of those things, I just get so excited because they're kind of the two things that I feel like are just such a cool centerpiece of what we are doing now. I just love it. So all of you that do both, especially those of you that listen to the podcast on the app, now you got me. Now you got me. Now you're tugging at my heartstrings. So great to hear from all you guys. But we're going to go ahead and wrap it up for this week. Tuesday, in case you're listening to this, Tuesday, October 6th, Gio Bernard is our guest at Beyond the Stripes, and OTR Improv is coming back down. So those of you guys that remember from last year, we had them on when George Iloka was with us, and it was maybe the funniest 10 minutes in the history of Beyond the Stripes. They are coming back on Tuesday. It's going to be a packed house down at Moorline, so I highly recommend you come early if you're coming. We start the show at 7 o'clock. At the Moorline Lager House downtown. So come on down. No more Reds games, no more expensive parking or anything like that. So you can come right down and watch, have a beer, talk football, get an autograph, all that type of stuff. Of course, we have the podcast for you every single Tuesday. So next week we'll be reacting to whatever happened against Seattle and looking forward to Buffalo. So anyway, it's been a good time. Jim, you were drugged up, but I don't think you said anything that you're going to regret later. But you did teach the kids about mixed drug use, and that's important.
Yes, very important.
Be responsible with your overlaps.
Yes.
All right, well, that sounds great. Well, I guess do we need music on the way out? something psychedelic and sort of drugged out.
Dream Machine, yeah. Oh, yeah, man, we got to go.
Yeah.
Creedence, baby.
Just bring up the Creedence.
Yeah, the Creedence.
I don't know about the Creedence. I know, I love it. We'll bring that out and get after it. So we'll talk to you next week on the BBP.